Session number 24730, Will 30.
Mr. Box, or Real 13, another thing I wanted to ask about the amalgamation was, did you see it as limiting your promotion prospects? Because in a sense, when you join the two battalions together, that means you've only got one RSM position. You know, there's eight company sergeant majors.
Yeah.
How did it affect?
Didn't really think about that. I'd been a warrant officer then for what, I don't know, 14 or 15 years, I suppose. I'd done most of my service in with the battalion, except for when I'd been with the TA, and they said that they wanted a sergeant major at three brigade headquarters. Would I like to go there? And I said yes, rather than go up to Berlin, because my wife was in a quarter in East Lone. We just had our fourth child, so it was obvious it would have been better to have been settled down and not shifted about too much. So when the battalion moved to Berlin, I stayed behind and was going to go to brigade headquarters.
But did that actually happen?
Well, no, because I had a couple of weeks leave, and I was sent for by the brigade major one day, and he said, "Sergeant Major, you're not going to come to us as Brigade Sergeant Major, you're going to be posted home to England as RSM of the 4th Battalion, the Royal Norfolk Regiment."
Now, how did you feel about leaving the battalion?
Well, obviously it was my last 2 years of service.
You knew that?
Yeah, I knew that. I'd always said that when I got my pension, I was going.
And how old would you be then?
I would be 40 then.
That was
So, and I always reckoned that at 40 I could get another job. But if I stayed until I was 55, which I could do, I'd be pushing me luck at getting a job. So I'd always said to my wife that when I got my pension, I was finishing.
So
I was posted here to Norwich to be RSM of the 4th Battalion. And I came home, went up to Berlin. I then came back and brought my family home. We came home in a car that I had. And I had a couple of weeks leave and went back to go back to Berlin at Easter of that year, 1960. And I lived in barracks in Berlin then. Obviously my wife had come home and I lived in, as I normally would do as a soldier.
So you were just rejoining the unit.
Yeah.
Prior to being sent back.
Being sent back.
So how long did that period last for?
That lasted until May, I think, when I then was posted home.
So from February to May.
Yeah.
Now, what about how did you feel when you heard you were going to be RSM? Would you have preferred to have been RSM of the first, or was that just not going to be possible?
No. Well, whether it was going to be possible or not, no. I was prepared to be RSM of anything. I'd been RSM of a rubbish dump if they'd wanted me to be, but no, it didn't. As RSM of the TA battalion, I had a bit more scope than I would have done as RSM of a regular battalion.
So you took over in July 1960.
Yeah.
And can you just say, what was the status and role of RSM as you saw it?
Well, you were the disciplinarian of the battalion, and with the adjutant, who was Captain David Thorne, who later became Major General Sir David Thorne, KBE.
I'll come back to you. What did you see the role of RSM as?
Well, once again, it was weekend training and evening training. You did all sorts of things. We went out on the, used to go out, the adjutant and I used to go out to Bodney, perhaps on a Friday evening, lay out, get the camp all organised for them, make sure we laid telephone lines and things like that. Something that you wouldn't normally do, but the adjutant and I always did it. And then we'd go and have a drink together somewhere in the evening, come back, and then on the Saturday they'd come out and there'd be the normal training. They'd go through battle training, whatever. And then Sunday they'd come back.
Let's talk about David. David Thorne was the adjutant.
Yeah.
What he's a captain then. What did you think of him? What was he like?
He was, once again, was a... I always described him, and when he died, I wrote to Lady Thorne and said he was one of the few people you could say was an officer and a gentleman. And he was. I mean, he would obviously talk to me. He would obviously listen to what I said. He would quite often ask me if I'd pick him up at the officer's mess at Horsham St. Faith's, where he lived, and take him home at night. And in all, we got on quite well. He played hockey as well, so that was another bonus.
And he was a good adjutant.
Yeah, he was a good adjutant.
How would you liaise with him, you know, on your day-to-day, not just the training?
Well, we were more friends, than, I think, in the end, than adjutant and RSM. I mean, if he wanted anything doing, he'd just ask me and I'd do it, if it was humanly possible. And I got to know, in fact, Lady Thorne now says, of course, you're a friend of the family. And that is how they treated me.
Now, what about the colonel? Who's your colonel?
The colonel was Adrian Robertson. Well, it was Colonel Flower, Dick Flower, to start off with.
What was he like?
He was a TA officer. He was a good TA officer. And once again, always treated me as a regimental sergeant major. I mean, he never talked down to me, and he was always quite pleasant. And then Adrian Robertson took over from him, and I'd known Adrian Robertson for some many years.
What was he like?
He was an officer who didn't particularly worry about his troops, I don't think. He was a good officer, other than, you know.
It's not what you'd normally have thought about an officer who didn't mind.
No. Well, I've known him a long time. He'd been my company commander in Hong Kong, and so I'd known him quite a long time. And once again, when we went to camp, we went to Trigantle, we went to Sennybridge in Wales. And we went down by train, and he said to me, I'm not going back by train, RSM. So he said, you can drive me back. So I said, all right. And the adjutant didn't think that was on, but we said, they've got their own company sergeant majors. Surely they can look after themselves. And so I drove the adjutant back in his Land Rover. We had quite a good trip, I think.
Drove the colonel back?
Yeah, drove the colonel back, yeah.
You had a good trip, you said?
It was about 3 o'clock when we left Wales, I think, and he said, what time do you think we'll be home? And I said, about 10. And he said, you'll never do it by 10 o'clock, RSM. But I said, well, we won't be much after. He said, well, when you get tired, let me know and I'll take over. And I said, you do the map reading, I'll do the driving, sir. Because he was a very good map reader. He was one of the best ones I ever came across. And so when we got to Thetford, it had been rainy, so I think you better slow down, it looks a bit greasy here. But we did, I dropped him at his quarters just after 10 o'clock in the evening. So, he was all right, he was a good CO again.
What about the junior officers? The territorial junior officers, they must have been quite in awe of you, I suspect.
Well, it wasn't that. I mean, I knew a lot of them for having served with the 4th Battalion, with A Company, so I knew quite a lot of them. All right. Perhaps I was a bit of a different RSM to what they'd been used to, but...
In what way, do you mean?
Well, like at camp. Now, at camp, when before I went there, the chance messes were open when they got there, and it very rarely closed. And when the first camp I went to, they said, right, well, we open the mess. And I said, yes, and it'll shut at 11 o'clock. Oh, no, the mess always stays open. I said, well, it might do when you did it, but it don't when I do it. Close it at 11 o'clock. And if we want an extension, you'll ask for it. And I'll ask the CO if we can have an extension. I said, but otherwise it shuts at 11 o'clock. I said, and you're going to have to dress properly. You're not going to be like blooming tramps in the mess. You're not coming in here with your hats on and your belts on, and you're going to be properly attired. You're not coming in here with your shirt sleeves open, necks open, and looking like a tramp. And they all said, but they all did it.
So that's the NCOs you're talking about.
What about
the officers?
Warrant officers and senior NCOs. Well, I didn't have anything to do with the officers. That was the adjutant's prerogative, not mine. But then when we went to Senate, well, just before we went to Senate, which, well, not just before, sometime early in the year of 1962, we were told that the Queen had agreed to have, that the battalion should have new colours presented to them. And that would be done in July, and the person who would be doing the presenting would be the Princess Margaret, who was colonel of our regiment.
Now, what preparations did you have to make for that? It must have been an enormous
effort. Well, yes. First off, we had to get the companies sorted out, and first off, I had to write out the whole parade. I wrote it all out. It was typed out and a copy given to all the officers and warrant officers and sergeants. And then we had a weekend with the officers and warrant officers and sergeants where the PSIs did a skeleton demonstration, and that is with two people with a rope the length of a company doing all the drill. We did that, and then the companies had to prepare the drill, learn to do what they got to do in their evening parades. And then one weekend we had a battalion weekend where each company went through the drill for the parade, and the best company was selected to be escort to the colour. That was done. And then when we went to Sennybridge for training that year, every morning the first parade was a practice colour parade, practice of new colours being presented. And we did that every morning for 14 days. Agreed they were only territorial soldiers. Agreed that was something they had got to learn, and it wasn't too difficult, but it wasn't simple. And agreed they all had to be fitted with number one dress blues, everything sorted and checked and everybody looked after. But they did, in my opinion, bloody well.
You were proud of them?
I was proud of them. We did a practice parade, and the weekend before the actual ceremony, we did a practice parade, which we invited people who couldn't actually be invited to the ceremony to come along and spectate. But before that, a couple of weeks before, we had a platoon from the depot come up with the REs building stands for people and all the things that were needed. And that took about a fortnight. But then once the parade was, the thing was all set, with the Saturday before the actual parade, we had a battalion parade and a photograph. We had the mechanical sweepers from the city hall came up and swept the square for us. And then actually on the day, Princess Margaret arrived at during the morning. I believe she flew into by helicopter to Horsham St Fays, met by the colonel of the regiment, Brigadier Barclay. And she came along, I think she had lunch at the officers' mess, and then the parade actually took part in the afternoon at 3 o'clock. And all the guests and that who'd been invited assembled. We had special stands for people, they put up a creditable show. I think they did bloody well for TA soldiers. I was quite pleased with it. But that was about my last main duty.
Before we go on, just let me one thing. I haven't asked you about the drill hall. Which one it was? Where were the 4th Battalions?
The 4th Battalion. Then the battalion headquarters had moved from Cattle Market Drill Hall, where it was originally, and was then stationed at Britannia Barracks, because Britannia Barracks had been handed over to the TA. So battalion headquarters and headquarter company were at Britannia Barracks. Support company was at All Saints Green Drill Hall. A company were at Yarmouth. B company, King's Lynn. C company were at Wyndham. And D company were at Attleborough. Deerham. D company were at Deerham.
And were there any sort of outstanding NCOs? I mean, do you remember Barr? I'm not sure his first.
Yes, he was company. He was a CQMS, I think, at the end. Yes, I remember Alec Barr. In fact, I still do remember him.
What did you think of him? Because he was an old soldier as well, wasn't he? I mean,
He'd been in the Second World War, but only just about. And then, of course, he'd been TA all the remainder of his life. He was never a regular soldier, I don't think. But he didn't stand out particularly, and he didn't sort of stick in your mind because he was bloody useless. He was a sort of
solid.
Yeah, solid. You know, someone you could rely on.
And what about the colonel of the regiment, Peter Barclay?
Peter Barclay, yeah, well, Peter.
Brigadier Barclay.
Brigadier Barclay, yeah.
What was he like? Because he was a 2nd Battalion man.
He's another crusty old so-and-so. Peter was once again someone who called a spade, and he didn't call it anything different. But I'd known Peter Barclay for some years, obviously, although he was 2nd Battalion.
What was he like as an officer? What was his reputation?
I didn't really serve with him as an officer. But I think he was always well spoken of by people who knew him, and he would always come and talk to you. I mean, he wasn't one of these people who sort of looked at you down their nose and thought you weren't worth talking to.
Now, you didn't last much longer after that parade, did you?
No.
Leave that July. What were the circumstances of you? Because that's when you finished in the army, July 62.
Well, I finished in November.
Oh, November, sorry. Yeah.
I had, after that, I had 7 weeks leave to take, and I was due out of the army on the 16th of November 1962, when my actual time finished, because I joined on my birthday was the 17th of November. And I'd have been 40 then, having completed 24 years. Well, 24 years and 9 days, I think, in actual fact. So I'd always said I was going to finish when I got me pension. And I did have an interview with a brigadier who had to sign a recommendation for me for a commission. And he said, you know, there's a commission for you. And I said, well, not interested, so I'm finishing. And Gene.
Why was that? You mentioned before you didn't feel that was right, but were you not tempted, perhaps?
No, because I always looked on the fact that at 40 I could get another job. At 55 I'd be pushing it, be pushing me luck. And in actual fact, it worked out well because.
If you could have been a quartermaster or whatever.
Well, I could have been, yeah, but. Then the pension wouldn't have been enough to live on. And I had 4 children, all of school age, all had to go to school. We bought this house in October 1960. So we were settled down. Jean said to me, look, if you're staying in, I'm not coming with you. I've been to Hong Kong, I've been to Germany twice. The children now have got to have schooling, so we've got a house, I'm staying. And I quite well understood her feelings. And I, as I say, I'd always said that when I got my pension, I was going. And it proved to be the best decision because I had 7 weeks leave. I started my leave on the Monday. On the Tuesday, I went for an interview at Norfolk County Council. They offered me a post.
What as?
As a clerk in the education post room. And asked me when I could start, and I said, well, when would you like me to start? And they said, well, as soon as possible.
But you got a job straight away. How well did you settle into working as a clerk after all that those years as a RSM and CSM?
Well, I didn't find it difficult. Obviously, I had to curb me way I worked.
In what way?
I mean, I couldn't tell people what to do so much. You know, I had to listen to what... And you had to be a bit more polite. I mean, I can... After a couple of years, I was made... I was given the job of being in charge of the post room. And the thing... I mean, I said to one of the boys one day, oh, do so-and-so. And some young lady said to me, well, say please. And I said, what for? And she said, well, it's polite to say please. I said, yeah, and what do I do if he tells me to do it myself? So she said, well, you won't be very popular. I said, I didn't come here to be popular, I come here to do a job, and I'm not asking him to do it, I'm telling him to do it. I said, there's a difference. Well, she said, that's not the way we work. I said, oh, well, it is the way I work, I'm sorry, but if you don't like it, you'll have to lump it. And so you did have to be a bit more careful how you work, but I found it not too difficult. To...
Did you miss the sort of travel and the...
No,
excitement of...
No, I'd had all the travel and excitement I wanted, really. You know, you get to a time where at 40 it was time to settle down, and as I say, you know, we travelled around, and two of our children were born in Germany. So,
now, what do you think your service career had given you? What advantages and disadvantages perhaps had it given
well,
you compared to the others?
It had given me the ability to make a decision, and it had given me the ability to be able to run things. I mean, when I took over the post room, there was no rules of what they had to do or what they could do and what they couldn't do. And I very soon persuaded the chief admin officer that we needed a set of rules for the post room so that we knew what to do, and the people who bought the posting knew what to do. They knew they couldn't bring it in at 4:30 expecting it to someone, or at 5:30 expecting someone to post it for them. Because, you know, at 5:30 we finished, and it wasn't fair to expect people then to start doing posts for people. So, yeah, and of course, as I said earlier, I became secretary, on branch secretary of the Nalgo, branch of Nalgo, and I then set to organise that. And they now always say that... I was the one that took it into being a trade union rather than an association.
Were you very trade union minded? Were you on the
not really, no, but I enjoyed running things and organising things. And when if I did a job, I always did it to the best of my ability. And I always used to say, if I can come home at night saying, well, I've done the best I possibly could today, I'm satisfied. If I come home and say, well, I should have done so and so, and I hadn't bloody well done it, then I'm not satisfied. And so it gave me the ability to run things and do things. And I mean, I was always able to talk. I mean, I was never in awe of the chief officer or of the chief executive. In fact, one of the chief officers we had, Colonel Coates, with, I got to be we got on quite well. Mainly because he knew Brian Dillon. They served together during the war. I ran the education post and the inquiry office. And I heard one of the young ladies say, yes, Colonel Dillon, one day. And I thought, I know that name. Stuck my head around the corner. It was Brian Dillon. He came and had a chat. went along to see Brian Coatsworth, said, I'm going along to see Colonel Coatsworth. And a little while later, Coatsworth came along, put his head in the door and said, I didn't know you knew Brian Dillon Paul. And I said, oh, yeah, sir. And after that, we were friends. I mean,
now, what about your contacts with the Royal Norfolk Regiment or the did you keep those, the regiment association? Did you join
not very much. Not whilst I was working, because, as I say, I was secretary of NALGO, which meant a lot of evening meetings and that. And then, after, 13 or 14 years being in charge of the post room, they suddenly decided that the education furniture store, which was situated in a old brewery at King Street in Norwich, was in such a mess that they wanted someone to go down there and sort it out. And, of course, the mug who they thought decided should go down there and sort it out was me. And although I said I didn't want to go down there, they said, well, you know, that's not on. You're going down there whether you like it or not, virtually. So I went down there, and that was a job that took me, a couple of years to sort the place out. But once I got it sorted out, it was a good job. And then I took over running the education special schools transport as well. All in all, that was quite a good job, and I did that until I retired in 1986.
Now, what about, when did you start taking an interest?
After 1986, I went to the regimental dinner, and almost the first words that were said to me by David Thorne were, I've got a job for you. And after that, I was talking to Major Reeve one day, who was a regimental secretary, and he said, well, if you want to do anything for the regiment, start a branch of the Regimental Association in Norwich. And I said, well, if they needed a branch of the Regimental Association in Norwich, surely they would have started one some years ago. But I came home that day and sat in my chair, and I thought, well, I ain't going to let him beat me. So I went and saw him next morning. I said, all right, I'll have a go at it. So I said, what about some money for expenses? Oh, yes, you can have. We can give you a grant. But you'll have to pay it back. I said, well, what's the point of giving me a grant? We're going to pay it back. What if nothing happens? What if I write 200 letters to people and we don't form a branch? Well, the money will have to be paid back, Mr. Boxall. So I said, oh, we can keep it. But then I was at Bassingbourne, and David Thorne said to me, I hear you're starting a branch up, Mr. Boxall. I said, yeah. What are you doing for money? So I said, I'm using my own. So he said, no, you're not. And he went over to his car and came back with 40 quid and gave me. But I used about £26 of it, and I sent him a cheque to pay him back the remainder.
And you succeeded?
I succeeded. I got a branch going. And that's been going for 12 years now, and I've been branch chairman for 12 years. I did intend to give up once I was ill in hospital, but it seems that they don't want me to give up.
Now, what about, you're also in the North Norwich Korean Veterans?
No, I'm also in the Korean Veterans Association, the Norfolk branch of the Korean Veterans Association, and I was chairman of that for 11 years, but I have given that up. Although I still go to the meetings, in fact, I had some very nice letters when I was ill, saying, you know, I hope you get better and blah blah blah. I still go down, and I'm chairman of the Norwich Combined Ex Services Association, which we try to do what we can. I mean, Norwich originally were only giving 10% discount on war pensions, disability pensions, and war widows pensions. And after a lot of badgering, we managed to get it that they would give 100%, same as a lot of other councils were. We've been after them turning round the Norwich War Memorial to face the City Hall, because it's in the garden.